Hi, I'm Lucia.
And I'm Nell. This is Totally Normal About That, a podcast where we explore various pieces of queer media and the things we love, hate, and love to hate about them. This week, we're feeling totally normal about Destiel. Again. Let's dive in.
Yes. Well, this episode is coming out on September 17th. Falls right in between the Supernatural 20-year anniversary, so how amazing is that? And also the anniversary of Castiel's appearance on the show in season 4. So we figured, what better time than to have a conversation about the impact of both Castiel and Destiel as a ship on the show and how it impacted the fandom and the longevity of the show. Got us here to 20 years.
Yeah, which was more culturally significant, the Renaissance or the introduction of Castiel on the television show Supernatural?
I definitely know which one was more significant to me, but like, you know.
I mean, would we have Supernatural without the Renaissance, though?
Okay, all right, you know what? That's too complicated for me to unpack right now. Probably not, honestly, with all the Bible lore that was, like, a thing during the Renaissance. But still, the point is,
to my personal life. Which one do I think about more regularly?
Which one influenced my brain chemistry more? Like, definitely Castiel.
Yeah.
So, all right. Like I said, you know, so the Supernatural started on September 13th, 2005. Which I can't even begin to process the fact that that was 20 years ago. Like, I watched this show from season one, and it hurts my brain to consider the fact that it's been out for 20 years. Like, I'm not that old.
I was in the fifth grade when Supernatural first started airing.
I'm just like, I don't even know how that's possible. Like, I look back and I'm like, yeah, that did happen, but man, it was... Supernatural has literally been out for longer than, like, half of my life, like, and obviously, like, there's, you know, maybe it's just my memories of childhood or whatever, but, like, it's hard for me to remember a time in my life that Supernatural wasn't out, so I'm like,
yeah,
oh yeah, this is, like, a touchstone of my whole existence.
Right. I mean, like, I didn't start watching, obviously, until I was a little bit older, but it has been out like it's been off the air now for 5 years almost, which is also wild to think about. So
let's not even go there. That's just so painful to consider.
I know, it's so funny. I was listening to an episode of Monster of the Week recently, and in it, one of the hosts, Chris, said something about, like, you know, this fandom, I think it'll still be around, like, maybe there won't be as many conventions in 5 years or all this stuff, but, like, there will still be this fandom. And I was like, oh, ho, ho, we have reached that point. We are 5 years on, and Supernatural will never die because Jensen Ross Ackles says no.
Right. Yeah, he really is just like, this is the thing. Like, I'll never let this go. And I can't blame him, you know? You do a thing for 15 years, like, you're committed to the thing. So, yeah, I have all kinds of stuff to say about, like, the numbers and the stats and the longevity of Supernatural. But before we get into all of that and discuss some of the impact of Castiel, I want to talk a little bit about the show prior to the entrance of Castiel and kind of some of the stuff behind the scenes that I guess led to his appearance.
Yeah, let's do it.
So a lot of this is stuff that, you know, if you've watched Supernatural and you've been in fandom for more than a minute, you probably are aware of, but we're going to like do a brief overview before we jump in about our feelings about it, just because, you know, it's good to set the stage. So, obviously, the show was created by Eric Kripke, and then, you know, he had a co-executive producer with Robert Singer, but it was, you know, Kripke's baby in those first few seasons. And We've talked about other shows that have been impacted by the writer's strike of 2007, 2008. But this show was definitely one of them, and it went
Absolutely.
through a lot of transitions there in the beginning. So, it went from being a Warner Brothers show onto the CW, and they made that transition. And then obviously it found a way to survive the writer's strike. It was on the bubble for like a number of years with always, the risk of cancellation. And basically, that's why season three only has 16 episodes, is because it was cut short due to the writer's strike. It kind of obviously influences the story. So what we know from the writers and from Eric Kripke is that the intention was not to take the story in the direction that it went. A lot of people have this idea that Eric Kripke had like a 5-year plan where he basically had like at least loosely mapped out this idea of what the show would look like over the course of 5 seasons. That's not actually true or like accurate. He did want 5 years, is something that he has explicitly stated. And it has to do with like pay and residuals. So essentially, if your show reached 100 episodes at the time that the show was like created and airing, it guaranteed like a certain amount of residual pay for the creators and the actors who were involved in the show. And so basically, if a show averages about 20 episodes a season, then getting 5 seasons is going to ensure that pay. And that's a really big deal for actors to,
Yeah, absolutely.
make that money. It's actually something that's come up in the recent SAG-AFTRA strikes, here in the last few years, because with changes with streamers and everything, shows aren't getting those longer runs. So his idea was basically like, I can do 5 seasons. I can make 5 seasons happen. If I can get this network to give us at least 5 seasons, then we can get to that point and, have that like residual income that's really gonna like help our show. And it would, prove him as a showrunner. This wasn't the first project he'd done, but it's like one of his first projects, definitely the first most successful project that he had. All that to say, the end of season three and beginning of season four with the introduction of Castiel was not planned like well in advance. It was something that occurred because of the strike and because of the need to like explore new story avenues. Because basically the issue was Dean wasn't supposed to end season three in hell. Like they had plans with Sam rescuing him and like going full dark side and everything else that was like wouldn't have made angels necessary.
Right. But then I think they thought they weren't sure if they were going to get a season four, so they wanted to find a way to like wrap it up.
Right.
And so then they're like, we'll put Dean in hell, and then that'll either be the end, which Jesus,
Right.
or we'll get a season four and we can figure it out then.
One of the things Kripke did that like I actually think really worked for him is that he left all of his seasons kind of on a cliffhanger. Which seems like a crazy thing to do, especially now in a world where shows get 1 or 2 seasons and then they automatically just get canceled. And even then, like it was a huge risk, especially around the time of the strike when, stuff with really strong viewership was still getting canceled. But personally, I think one of the reasons it worked for him is because he didn't just leave stuff unfinished. Like he left stuff on a cliffhanger in a way that was like, it was obvious he'd set all this stuff up to be continued into another season. And I think it indicated that he had a lot of story ready to go if he was renewed, which like is important, because if you don't have story to pitch, then like what's the point of giving you another season? And he could say, I've done all this, and so here's all the opportunity and like things we can do if you just give us more episodes. Which is essentially like what he did every season.
Yeah, absolutely. It also helped that like this was really Supernatural was sort of really riding the tales of some other shows that had been really popular and sort of really capitalizing on this desire for this sort of genre. But was also like, I don't want to say, it was one of the first to sort of capitalize on it in this way, and it put this sort of slightly different spin on it that it wasn't about like, there wasn't like a love interest thing at first, like it was about family in a different way. And like, it also helps that they cast two extremely attractive men to play Sam and Dean. And Jensen probably would have brought some of his sort of fans over from things like Dark Angel and Days of Our Lives or whatever, like all Smallville, all those things he'd done. Maybe Jared brought some people over from like Gilmore Girls. They definitely like had these, they chose well in casting because they chose two actors who are quite compelling. And then were able to build off of that, and somehow ended up with a fan base that is loyal to a fault in a lot of ways.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We unfortunately are. But, you know, fortunately for the show and for the, you know, cast and crew and everything, you know, we are dedicated even long after the show has ended. And I think one thing I want to say just right off the top is I personally believe the entrance of Castiel and the dynamic between Dean and Cass over the course of the seasons is one of the foundational things about the show that ultimately made it what it was and contributed to the longevity of the show and, like, you know, solidified a huge part of the fandom and drew people in. Like, it is incredibly important to the show. That said, like, it's obviously not the only compelling factor of the show. Like, the show had a lot going for it in those first three seasons. And they continue to have that. It's just the impact of Castiel is just undeniable. But like you said, you know, the show already had like a clear foundation with the story and the themes and everything. And what I think I really love about the introduction of Castiel is that he just fits into that really well. Mm-hmm. And like the choices they made then from that point on, it wasn't like they took the show in a whole new direction. It's that they like built on what they already had.
Yeah.
But in like a, you know, in a new way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they had a really solid foundation and then they just basically built on a new wing of this building. Like, we're wing angel joke. I make myself laugh so much. But they were able to sort of expand upon this world in a way that felt like a natural extension of what they had done before. And like, we could quibble that like sometimes they got a little too into the angels and demons things and they moved away from some of the stuff that made the show so originally compelling. But it's not like demons were new. Like, demons had been around since season one, so it's not like there's such a huge leap to angels are a thing. Which I think helped the show immensely, because if it had been season four, like the start of season four, and they were suddenly like, guess what, angels and demons are real, I think it would have been a harder sell as opposed to like demons are real and angels have just been fucking around doing something else for a while, but now they've decided to get a little more involved in everything. Like, that was a pretty manageable sell. And it helps that, like, the introduction of Castiel is just so good and iconic. Like, that scene
absolutely
is the scene. It's one of the scenes in the show that, like, sticks with people of, like, walking through this building, this barn, with the sparks and the light. And, like, and I think one of the things that worked so well also is that, and that I'm a little sad other people who played angels didn't follow, was, like, just how weird Castiel was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he really had that, you really got this sense of, like, this is somebody who doesn't know anything about the world and is very removed from it all and, like, is logic and is objective fact and, like, knows history but doesn't understand the human aspects of it. And so, like, I think that worked so well because you really were like, oh, this is different. This is somebody different. And then, unfortunately, a bunch of other people came in and just started acting angels like people who had a... and then it just made Castiel be, like, the weird autistic angel,
right.
Which, like, love him, but... and part of that, I think, that worked so well was, like, how bewildered Jensen and Jared were by Misha, because it really comes across to, like, who is this? They've talked about, like, that first scene and some of the choices Misha made, and that... Jensen was just basically like, who is this guy and what is he doing? Which works.
Like, what is happening right now? Misha was such excellent casting, especially because, I mean, obviously this wasn't his first acting job. You know, he'd done other things before, but this is really his first, like, major role. And I think, again, that works for him because, one, it puts him on a more even playing field with some of the other actors in terms of, like, the significance of his role and everything and, like, where he's coming in from. And also it means that, like, you're not getting someone that you're automatically associating with something else so that you're constantly comparing Castiel to, like, other characters. Like, yeah, I look at Misha's acting now and I see all the different things and I'm like, oh yes, he was this and that and whatever. And, like, I think about the way he works as an actor. But, like, you know, when I was watching the show over the years, it wasn't like I was sitting there, oh, like, is he like this in other things? Which, I mean, unfortunately for Jensen Ackles, like, he suffers from now because every role that he takes on is compared to Dean Winchester. But, like, that's just how it's going to be when you play a role that significant for that many years. So Misha not really having to deal with some of that kind of allows Castiel to even be more iconic because he's so, like, singular in his existence.
Yeah, 100%. It's true that, like, not knowing him from other things, like, I think that's a failing we see a lot these days in movies and TV, is, like, they cast these really big names who are known for these really iconic roles, but then it's hard to see them as somebody else sometimes, and so you end up with those comparisons like you see with Jensen in these other roles. And to be fair, he chooses a lot of roles that have some things in common.
Thanks.
He has his genres and he sticks with those, which, like, good for him. But but certainly having someone completely new allows you to see them as the character in a deeper way, where you're like, only, you're like, this is the character. You don't know who the person is. They're a blank slate.
Yeah.
Which just makes it so interesting.
Absolutely.
And again, like, really contributed to that introduction of just, like, who is this man with this, like, the wide eyes and the hair sticking up and this earnest facial expression that's sort of both earnest and very carefully blank at the same time, who's, like, small and sort of trim but not intimidated by people who are bigger than him.
I love that we consider Misha Collins small. Like,
I mean, he's, like, in comparison to Jensen and Jared, he's certainly,
I mean, he's like, what, an inch or two shorter than Jensen, and
Yeah,
he's,
but Jensen
you
always wears his Heely boots.
that's true. That, you know, I like Jensen looks like a very big person on screen, not like just in terms of like presence and just, you know, he's very tall, he's very muscled, like, so he seems like large. And he is, like, I mean, he's super tall. But having like seen him in person, personally, I feel like he looks like a person who was like shorter and then just like kind of got stretched out, and not in a bad way, and just in like a like a
It's like
like
you took a smaller
he's just so
person.
slim. He's just
Yeah.
so
Yeah. Well, it's like you took a smaller person and then you clicked on the corner of them and like dragged them to be bigger.
like just kind of stretched him out a little bit. And it's, and again,
But
like
he
not in a
also,
bad
like,
way,
he's
but it's
always
funny,
standing
like,
next to people who are super tall, like Jared, who's
yeah.
much taller, or like, and like, I don't know if it's in his contract that Jensen always has to work with someone taller than him because he's
I
always
have
standing
no
next to these
idea.
people who are like 6'5", so he just looks so itty bitty. And you're like, this man is very tall
He
and
looks
also wears
teeny
his heeled
tiny.
boots.
He's very slim. He really benefited in the show from having all those layers. Like, not gonna lie, all the, you know, military jackets and everything, or the leather jacket, like really give him some size and
Bulk.
shape.
Yeah.
Yeah, some bulk that,
Yeah. I
like,
mean, but
yeah.
all three of them had that. I mean, I think in the middle
For
seasons,
sure.
Jared bulked up and became a
Yeah.
turbo Jared for a
Yeah.
while there, where he was just like huge. He was just a huge. But like
You could
both
tell his
Misha.
muscles like barely fit in those shirts.
I know. Yeah. And like his thighs were like bursting out of his jeans for a while.
And
But
speaking of
both.
thighs bursting out of jeans, like, I mean, look at Misha, especially in the later seasons. He just like beefed right up.
Yeah, they didn't. They needed to get that guy a bigger trench coat because he was bust. He was beefing himself right out of
Yeah.
his clothes. But yeah, in the early seasons, especially like both Jensen and Misha, and Jared, some like they benefited from all the bulky layers. There's like every once in a
Yes.
while there'd be a scene of like the one where Castiel is at the laundromat. And he takes off his clothes, and you're like, oh, you're just a little guy after all those
Right, you're
layers.
like,
Like, you
oh, okay.
already looked kind of like a little guy compared to Jensen and Jared. But then you take all of these layers off, and you're just this little string bean of a guy.
Right. A very fit little guy, but yes, a little
Well.
guy indeed.
And then they all kind of beefed a little bit.
Yeah,
Although
they did.
Jensen, these days, Jared is much leaner, I think. And Jensen oscillates depending on the role he's playing, because obviously as Soldier Boy he tends to be on the bulkier side, but then in like Countdown or other stuff he sort of leans himself slims himself down a little bit. So
Yes. Don't know how we got quite on this tangent, but like, yeah, I agree. Like, I think that they work in terms of even just like the aesthetic of it, like, because they're all a little different, but they're not like so dramatically different, which
right.
honestly, I think that's part of the reason that, you know, some of the other actors like Rich Bate, who played Gabriel, and you know, Rob Benedict, who played Chuck, like also really work because they are significantly different in terms of like height and aesthetic. So they create like a really good contrast against the three leads.
Yeah, and it's funny because like Rob Benedict is 5'8", so he's like average height. But
Right, he's normal height.
he looks tiny. He's minuscule compared to these other guys. Like you put him next to Jared and you're like, you could fit a whole other man in there.
Well, I mean, to be fair to him, Jared has like how many inches on him? You know, like 9? Like, it's
More,
ridiculous.
yeah, he has, God, yeah, 9 inches or something.
Too many inches. Like, he's just too much taller. So, yeah, I mean, I would feel really small compared to someone like that too, like, and half, like, you know.
Yeah.
But
And then it's even funnier when they're standing next to somebody like Ruthie
Connell. Who's so tiny.
Who is 5'3".
Right, like, it's gotta be so nice for Rob to be with someone who's so short so that he can get to feel tall in their relationship.
I know.
When he's constantly surrounded by people who are so much taller. Like,
I know. Well, and it helps that, like, Rob seems to really fit into that niche role of pathetic guy, which is funny because he's, like, so cool and such a great person. But these roles he plays, he just plays these, like, dorky little dudes. And yes, one of them turned out to be God, but he still was sort of a dorky little dude.
Okay. So the average height for a man globally is 5'8" or 8.1". In the US, it's 5'9". Like,
so they're like, yeah, but that's
tall.
Just because Jared Padalecki is. Well, and we have like the NBA and stuff, and so we have this like, and we have these sports teams that like drive the average up, I feel like.
Well, and also you could talk about, you know, different genetics or whatever. The point is, they're abnormally tall. Like,
yes.
But, like, in a way we benefit from. We appreciate that. It's good that they're tall. Like, no complaints.
It's true.
Anyway, all that to say, like, the casting of Misha, I don't know how we got here, but the casting of Misha, like, really worked, both in terms of, like, what he brought to the role and, you know, the way he interpreted the character, the aesthetic of having him there with the other guys and like the interactions they have. And then obviously also like kind of the singular nature of this character because of his, you know, prior acting career and the way that, you know, he feels so incredibly unique. And yeah, I just think that like the choice to bring in this character and the choice to cast him in that role were both so excellent. And then also not just to bring him in, but to keep him there. Because obviously he wasn't meant to stay more than a few episodes, much less stay right up until the end.
Yeah, because he's basically, I think, said that he was like originally brought on to do like 3 episodes. And then he was supposed to die in On the Head of a Pin, I think, during the fight with that guy, Alistair.
I was thinking of Alistair.
Or with Uriel, maybe. He was supposed to die. So he wasn't, Castiel was not supposed to be around. It was like a 3-episode arc. And then they just kept extending it. Like, actually, we need you for another episode or two or something. And then on and on and on. And then finally they were like, oh, I guess you're just around. Until they tried to get rid of him permanently. And that went poorly. So then they just had to bring him back again.
Yeah. And you know what? That's something that I find like really compelling. Because it makes sense to me that at minimum for the Kripke era, like they keep Castiel around. Like, I can understand they brought him in. They're like, and they did this with most actors and with most characters. They're like, we're going to bring him. We're going to see how it goes. And then they'd like them and they come back and say, hey, you know what? We want to keep bringing him back. We want to write something else for you. So, I mean, that's not unusual. Like, it's not unheard of to have him there. There's been a lot of talk about how he was supposed to die in the head of a pin. I don't know if that is correct or if it's like a rumor.
I could have sworn I've seen a video of him
like,
talking about it at a con, or like someone who posted about it at a con or something, but like that could also just be incorrect completely.
Right. I'm not saying it's not true. I think it would be interesting like to know for sure if it was, because obviously that makes a difference in whether they actually just decided to keep bringing him back because he was there, or if they intentionally rewrote things to keep him. Because, I mean, obviously, if they wrote him to die and then they chose to just, he's not dead at the end, like, that makes a difference. And I think story-wise, it works better, because if he and Uriel got in the fight and then Uriel killed him, even if Uriel dies, like, they kill each other, for example. Like, it's a weird choice to make for that story, to have them both die. And if that was what they were planning, like, I'm glad that it's not the direction they went. Not only because we got to keep Cass, but also because that's a weird way to end that episode. It's just be like, yeah, both of them are dead now, and we're gonna just start over with new angels, or, move on or whatever. I do think it makes so much sense, though, that they kept bringing Cass back. Again, not just because Misha's a great actor or because the character really works for me, but because one of the things that Eric Kripke has said numerous times, even in like his most recent interviews, is that part of the reason that he didn't want to bring is because they're basically these all-powerful beings who can just fix everything, and he didn't want the brothers to be in a situation where they just had this magic solution, where they could just be like, yeah, just fix this for us. So writing the angels then as dicks, like, kind of subverts that expectation and like slides around that problem, so you don't really have to deal with that. But like, it would be a really uneven dynamic to have all of the angels be assholes, and then the brothers have to deal with that, so they have this all-powerful entity that they're dealing with, and like, not a way to level up to kind of meet that power. So I think Cass bridges the gap for them because now they have this, I wouldn't call him a sidekick, but like, an ally, essentially, on their side, who isn't going to be strong enough on his own to defeat all the angels, but does like aid them in that fight and like offer them like knowledge and power and everything that they're not going to get from someone like Bobby.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it would have been really easy, and we do see this to some extent in Supernatural, like where it's like, well, they've just defeated this huge big bad thing. What can they possibly face now that's going to be somehow bigger and badder than this? Like without, and I think they tried to do things that were sort of different to varying levels of success. The Leviathans in particular, like they tried to do this different thing. And it could have worked had they spent more time focusing on the Leviathans and less on side quests, but instead you just had the Leviathans like doing evil capitalism in the background while they were dealing with their normal brother drama. I also think like it was a really I like that they gave after a while Castiel sort of his own missions and this o his own sort of arcs and things he was focused on, because if he was just their ally all the time it would have just been like, oh, they've got their powered up angel friend. But there were times where they were at odds with him, or there were times where he was like, I'm doing this but my reasoning is different than your reasoning. And so he's not. Which is actually funny because it's sort of similar in some respects to like Crowley and Rowena and some of these other characters, although he's never portrayed really as an antagonist, in that way. Like he is always seen as, even when he's at odds with them and against them, it's never like we need to defeat Castiel kind of thing. Like he's, and that I think was an interesting choice because it really contributed to this sort of moral ambiguity that we see in this show, where like it's not just about being good or evil, like it's about the choices you continue to make. And sometimes I think they kind of kept leaning into the cast makes bad choices thing too much. But Misha and Jensen always acted the hell out of those sort of scenes, and so, I think probably part of the reason they kept bringing him back was just because they saw him, they saw Misha and Jensen work together and were like, this is special. Like, whatever is going on here is...
Works.
And they needed to do something. Like, as much as there are people who hated Castiel's introduction and insist that the show was always just about the two brothers, and, like, those are the two ones that are important, 15 seasons of just the two of them would not have worked. Like, you needed to introduce somebody else into that dynamic. Because, like, by the end of season three, even, you get some of the brother stuff, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
This. I think... And they keep going back to, like, once they... Every time they have just, like, brother drama that's just about brother drama, it's always like, oh my god, didn't we do this?
I think the closest they ever got to making Cass just, like, the antagonist is in season six, when he becomes... Godstiel and like breaks Sam's wall and is like, bow before me and everything. And that's, I mean, it's very short lived, but he is ultra powerful. They are basically like, we gotta stop him. But they do a really good job of treating that in the same way that they treated Sam going dark side, where it's like, we have to stop him, and stopping him is the most important thing. But, like, he's still our friend, and if we can save him, like, that we want to do it that way. We want to find a way to stop him that doesn't destroy him, if at all possible, because, like, we care about him and he's important to us. And that wasn't necessarily how they felt about other antagonists. So, like, it really showed how significant and special he was. And... It was so clear that he was doing what he thought was right. And yes, his motivations were wrong and, like, twisted and corrupted. But one thing I loved about it is they really kind of did a lot of stuff with Sam's story regarding, like, addiction in seasons 4 and 5 specifically. And they kind of continue doing stuff with that with Castiel in season 6. Like, it's a bit of a shift, but, like, in talking about the relationship he has with Crowley and the power he's trying to obtain, there's a lot of ways to read that. Like, his desire for this power and the way that it overtakes him parallels that in a lot of ways. And they did a lot to kind of parallel some of this stuff with Cass and Sam. And really, I think that that cemented his importance into the show, even after, you know, Lucifer was defeated, and maybe the stuff with the angels, like, wasn't as significant or wasn't as focused on. It was like, okay, but Castiel is still incredibly important if we're devoting this much time to his story and paralleling it with stories of the two main characters, you know, from past seasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I loved that they did that. And then you said something else that I wanted to respond to, and I'm trying to, like, remember what I wanted to say. I have no idea. Anyway, go ahead.
No, don't ask me. I don't remember what I said. That Misha and Jensen were weird about each other, and that made it better.
Oh, yes. Like, I just... Obviously, they have chemistry, and, like, that makes a significant difference. But I think it's... One thing that is so important about the introduction of Castiel, as you said, like, is the chemistry that he has with Jensen, and even with Jared. Like, the relationship between Cass and Dean and Cass and Sam, like, offers all of these new avenues. And it's not even just, like, the good stuff. The antagonism that Cass has with Sam is really interesting and, like, fun to explore in the beginning. But one of the things that the introduction of Castiel did to really help Supernatural in terms of longevity was also all of the storylines and the characters that his existence allowed to come into play that we wouldn't have really had without him. Like,
Yeah.
all the stuff with Claire. Like, none of that would have ever happened or would have ever. And it, I don't know that we would have ever got Wayward Sisters as they were, or like any of
Right.
that, if it wasn't for Castiel's existence. I mean, you can make an argument for Jody and Alex and everything. Like, sending Claire there and making it more of a thing is like really kind of what built that. Arguably, like, you wouldn't have Jack if it wasn't for Cass. Like, all of the stuff
Certainly
in the
not,
last
no.
several seasons wouldn't even exist. And it's just, I think, really significant and notable that, like, Castiel's continued existence on screen didn't just open up, like, a lot of plot lines. It actually, like, made a lot of the characters that we love, like,
Yeah,
it
well,
made
like a
room for
lot of
them
the
so they could
Meg
exist.
stuff wouldn't have happened without
Yeah.
Castiel. Yeah, I think there's a ton of that stuff. Like, they would have had to figure out who else would have done the stuff with that made the Leviathans. These huge big arcs are, in many ways, things that having Castiel as a character allowed
We
allowed
wouldn't
us
have
to
gotten
explore.
Balthazar. Or,
No, we
like,
wouldn't
not
have
in the
gotten
same way. Like,
right. And Metatron, like that whole thing,
right.
which and you know, the incredible scene at the end of season 8 where the angels fall, like one of the most visually stunning things the show ever did.
Exactly, yeah. Not to mention, like, you'd miss out on an entire era of, like, you know, buddy cop goodness between Cass and Crowley. Like,
Oh my God.
can you imagine the
Yeah.
show if we didn't have some of that? Like, in
Well, and yeah, and like obviously as the show, I think another thing that it did that I think was not intentional was that it's really cemented Dean as the lead of the show.
yeah.
Because until then it had been very much like Sam and his, you know, the show I believe was very much pitched as like Sam and his brother Dean. Sam is the, you know, Dean is basically normal except for the hunting monsters thing, but Sam is the special one. And then you have Cass introduced, and you have the idea of the righteous man introduced, which is Dean. And like we can also say some of this is like the fact is that Jensen acted like no matter how good other people on the show were, Jensen acted circles around people in those first few seasons. And so they like and he was able to build this character with so little given to him and like the micro expressions and stuff like that. And like every time he's in the background of a scene, he's doing something that's like, oh yes, this sad, tortured man, please let me, you know, let me fix him. Let me ruin him. I don't know. Like, and so like part of that's obviously just on Jensen's acting talent, but the idea of introducing an angel, like they couldn't make Sam the demon blood boy and also the righteous man. And so then you've got Dean that, and that's something that just keeps go like in season 4, Dean really takes over as central, and that just keeps building with like the Mark of Cain and Demon Dean. Like even the stuff in like season 8 with the trials and like it's so much of it seems focused on like Dean's experience of his brother going through this really thing. And this is something that like
I
a lot of other
know.
podcasts have talked about that like they kind of sideline Sam a lot and there's a lot of episodes where he's basically just there to get knocked out or like say, so get
Yes.
this and like dig into the lore or whatever.
Right.
But I think the introduction of Castiel is what made this show about Dean.
Yes. Well, and I want to say too, like, you know, because I don't want to discredit Jared and his acting and everything. I mean, obviously, like, Jensen Ackles is the goat on this show. Like, he is, like you said, acting circles around everybody. And I wouldn't sit here and say that, like, Jared is a bad actor or anything. Like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that he definitely brings to Sam's character. And I think it's something that we need to acknowledge too, that part of the reason that his character is often sidelined wasn't because of his acting, it's because of stuff that was going on with Jared specifically behind the
Yeah,
scenes
absolutely.
that pulled him, away from the set and from the story. And he's been very upfront and honest about to, rest and recover and deal with some of that. And so, again, if we're talking this specific episode about Castiel and the ways that he impacted the show, one of the benefits of having him on the show is the fact that he was able to take on some storylines and some screen time that offered both Jared and Jensen time off so that they could actually spend time with their families and take care of their mental health and just like be away from the set so that they had the stamina to continue doing the show for 15 seasons because the show is a lot. I mean, even if you're looking at 20 episode seasons, which many of them were longer than that, that's a lot of work. And you're doing, between 6 to 12 day shoots per episodes, depending on, where it falls in the season and how complicated it is. And the episodes, like the not episodes, but like the shooting days, like run really long. A lot of times they're like overnight or late into the night because they're shooting, night scenes and in the dark. And they have to account for like Vancouver weather and like, all of this stuff. And I can't imagine how exhausting that is, particularly when you're not actually an ensemble cast, when you're just two main leads. And I feel like the guest, like cast of the show in general, is incredible. But you need those consistently recurring characters over the years, like Bobby and Castiel and Crowley and Rowena and whoever, to come in and take some of the load off, because otherwise they would have just burnt out.
Yeah, I mean, in those years they got, married, they started having kids, like there was all this stuff that they were doing. Unfortunately, Misha did not get the load taken off of him. There's some pretty unfortunate stories about like what they put him through, and some of the treatment he got. Not like from the other cast necessarily, but like the way the show
The
treated
network,
the
yeah.
network treated him. But yeah, I mean, it does, the more people who are sort of part of the main cast, the more stuff gets split up between people. And so you do see that happening, and they're, it's always hard. They don't get the balance right necessarily, and like their reluctance to sort of bill Castiel as like the third main for a long time would have impacted that a little bit. And then their, repeated attempts to get rid of him that was always met by such fierce blowback. But yeah, I mean, it
Yeah.
was a huge shift that happened for the show and the fandom as well. And that's not even getting into the Destiel of it all. Like, that's just the introduction of Castiel as a character and the way his story plays throughout the rest of the show, all the way to the very end.
Absolutely. He's so integral to the story and to the, way everything played out that I can't imagine what the show would have looked like without him. And not just without his, entrance, but like I mean, he obviously died and came back a number of times. And if we had treated any of those deaths as permanent earlier in the show, like I can't imagine what the show would look like if it tried to continue those seasons without him. Like definitely wouldn't be the same show. I don't know that it would work for me because essentially they'd have to fall back on just the two brothers for the entirety of it. And I love Sam and Dean and I love their relationship, brother dynamic and, drama between them. But like part of the reason that wouldn't work for me in later seasons in particular is because they've grown and matured so much, and there's still drama between them. They're obviously individuals who are gonna like have issues and whatever. But like by the time we hit like season 11 or whatever, they're really starting to grow out of a lot of that coaching and to communicate better and like be better about things. And if, say, Cass died at the end of season 11 or season 12 and never came back, I feel like you'd have to reverse a lot of their growth to like get the drama between them, and it wouldn't work for me. I don't want to
Yeah,
see
and
that.
you see sort of how that shifts thing. Like, you got this whole thing where it turns out that Dean has a man cave in the bunker and Sam just has no idea about it. And then they go there and
Like,
there's
oh,
like
hey.
two recliners and this TV, and it's clearly like this is where Dean and Cass hang out without Sam. Or the episode where Sam and Cass are team up and go to the town where Sam gets like magicked into wearing a cardigan, and they get back and it's this whole thing about like I told him about the cardigan. Like, it
Right.
just introduces all of these little things, and like the characters, yeah, like they need, here's the thing, is the codependency, the toxic codependency they have does start to improve. Like, I won't say it's ever gonna fully go away, but like by the end of the show, it is different.
Yes.
And a lot of that has to do with the introduction of Castiel as like this character who, you know, you're allowed to have more than one friend, basically, kind of deal. Like, you can have more than one other person in your life who matters to you.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So I want to talk a little bit about obviously the Destiel of it all. You know, we've talked a lot about Castiel, and I have some, again, some numbers and things I want to kind of go over like here in a little bit, but starting off, like looking at the Destiel of it all, I think it's undeniable that not only did Castiel have a huge impact on the show and on the fans, but the relationship between Cass and Dean is really integral to the show, whether you ship it or not. Like, it's an integral part of the show. But for fans in particular, and like fans of them as a ship, like, that really was a thing that cemented a lot of people's relationship with the show and like brought people in to watch it and like built interest. Because I mean, there were a number of people who were there for them and like for this relationship. And I think that's pretty clearly indicated even just through fan fiction. So I was looking at it last night and then I just pulled up AO3 again, and in the time I looked at it last night until just now, so maybe 10 hours, there's like 12 more fics already under the tag. But if you look on AO3 as of right now, there's over 123,000 works under the tag of Castiel slash Dean Winchester. That's not even just looking at Castiel specifically, or, you know, Supernatural specifically. Like, that's just their tag. And that is over, that's like 40% of all Supernatural fics in general. So you're talking like anything that's tagged Supernatural, 40% of those tags include Castiel slash Dean Winchester. That's a ridiculous percentage for a fandom like that. Like, that's huge. Like, I don't even know how to like where to begin with that, with the number to express like how I feel about it and the fact that it's such a huge percentage of those stories.
It's, yeah, it's huge. I mean, it's, people really latched onto this. And in part, it's because, like, until Castiel was put on the show, there really weren't a lot of plausible love interests for the boys. Like, Wincest is a huge thing in the fandom, and, like, that's, if people want to ship that, whatever, they're fictional characters. It's not something I tend to engage a lot in, but that, like, that was, people like to ship things. Like, it's,
yeah,
a lot of people go into watching things looking for something to ship. Not everybody does. But, like, there weren't many characters around in the show who you could ship Sam and Dean with, because there just wasn't anybody around for long enough. Like, there was Joe a little bit, and that was a thing with her and Dean for a bit, but not, like, a huge one. In part because anytime a female character was introduced, like, a woman was introduced onto the show, she'd get hated off, because people just, like, hated the idea of anyone coming in between the brothers. And so when Castiel showed up and he and Dean had that instant sort of, like, spark there of, like, there's something different about this relationship, like, that really took off. And I think people really grabbed onto it. And, like, we've talked to a number of people in the fandom, like, and anyone who's listened to Monster of the Week knows that, like, there are plenty of people who, like, were not shippers. They were staunchly, like, not shippers. That wasn't a thing. And then it was sort of like an, oh, we don't even have to ship this. It's just there kind of deal. Like, it's just, like, it's just on the screen.
Right. Like, it's literally just there. And, like, whether you acknowledge it or not, like, it just exists. Like, it just does. Which is pretty amazing that they did that. Because again, I mean, the show started in 2005. It ended in 2020. So, like, 2/3 of the show was made and existed prior to gay marriage being legal in our country. And, like, sometimes I don't know that new viewers grasp that, like, really understand what that means for the show and for the story and the relationship, and, like, the impact that Castiel had and that Destiel had on the show and on the fandom. Like, you and I have talked about this in other episodes and a little, like, kind of leading up to some of this, but, like, prior to gay marriage becoming legal in 2015, it wasn't like we saw a huge increase in laws in states making gay marriage legal. What we actually saw were a sharp increase in laws in states making gay marriage illegal, which is part of why the advocacy for that and then the, you know, acknowledging of that by the Supreme Court and everything made that such a big deal, because there was, you know, politicians actively working against gay marriage and gay rights. And the thing about Supernatural, especially, like, around that time, around, like, you know, 2015 or whatever, when you're talking about, like, season 10 and, like, kind of the seasons leading up to that, is, like, probably around, like, season 8 or so, I think the studio finally acknowledged, like, this show is here to stay. It's not really going anywhere. It has the viewership. It has the fandom to, like, go somewhere and, like, really be a thing. And it truly became, like, the touchstone of the network. Like, I wouldn't say that the network, like, centered itself around this show, but, like, the show kind of defined a lot of things for the network. It was their legacy. And so obviously they have, like, a lot of particular ideas about what they want the show to be, because it is a legacy. But it just gets me that, like, in this time kind of leading up to that, when you look at, like, seasons 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, like, not only do you get some of the some of the really good like stuff with Castiel and stuff with Dean and Cass and like their relationship, but you're also just getting more queer representation kind of around that time. You know, with Charlie and like other characters that are kind of being brought in, which I know a lot of people like struggle with that it's not more explicitly queer, but to me it feels really significant that they were still doing something so boldly in the time that it was being made. Because it wasn't just like, oh, we have a queer character, like we have Cass saying things like, you know, he doesn't concern himself with gender or whatever, you know, he's a genderless being and everything. And you have Charlie, who is like openly a lesbian and has this relationship with Dean and is saying stuff like Cass is dreamy and whatever. You see all of these things written into the story, and personally, this is why I have a hard time with the idea that the show like queer baited us with this, because I think it's easy to feel that way when it, you know, some of the stuff that the way it ended was unsatisfying. And I'm not here to like shit on anybody's feelings about this or their interpretation of like things. For me, I struggle to feel like that because when I experience the show and I look at the context of like when it was made and what they were doing, I see queer coding and I see like active, intentional planning and like writing done by the creators to give us like what they could within a show that was very much limited by its own legacy. And I'm always going to see queer coding in a time like this as like an act of resistance, not as something that was intended to be harmful. Supernatural is obviously really messy because it, you know, it's a big production, has a lot of creators and writers and hands in the pot, but like I don't know. There's just something about it where like I look at Castiel's story and I look at the, you know, the ship that is Destiel, and I'm just like, they were doing something there. They were going somewhere with that.
Yeah, I think it's like pretty well documented that there were some differences of opinion in the writer's room about how to handle the Destiel situation.
Such a nice way to put it.
Obviously, I
So politically
know.
correct.
Very tactful of me.
Differences of opinion.
Yeah, so there was a bit of a fight. A bit of a beach off going on in the writer's room, one might say. Have you watched the Barbie movie yet?
Don't judge me. Like, I haven't seen anything, so that's kind of the point of this podcast. It's gonna happen. We're gonna talk about it. Anyway, go ahead.
But yes, so there was a fight going on in the writer's room and sort of on multiple levels, like network, producers, create like there was this whole thing, like showrunners. I don't think anyone went into the show when Castiel was introduced in season four, like, yes, we're gonna introduce a love interest for Dean and it's gonna be a man and an angel.
Right.
But I think writers, many of the writers and the actors to some extent, like, saw the natural chemistry that was there and chose to lean further into that and say and sort of
Right.
explore that a little bit. And I always, you know, I have some pretty strong opinions about the use of the word queerbaiting and the way that it is misunderstood as a concept. Like, the show, I don't think that Supernatural was a queerbait because
Right.
queerbaiting is an intentional marketing strategy used to get queer viewers to watch something with the promise of or the tease of queer content that then there isn't any of actually. Right. And Supernatural didn't really do that.
Right.
And I would argue at times they did the opposite, where they explicitly tried to be like, no, brothers, just brothers, pals, friends, homeboys, no gay.
Like, none at all. Like,
none of that. Like, there was, you know, at cons, it wasn't something that was allowed to be talked about, really. Like, the actors would be like, no, that's not, you know. And, like, obviously those answers have changed over time because things in the show changed over time. And, like,
right.
I don't think it's queer baiting for a show to decide at some point, actually, you know, maybe we do want to go in this direction. Like, what they've been doing, or maybe we're not actually going to go in that direction. Like, I don't think that's queer baiting to, like, make those choices over time, because especially with a show that's this long, like, it's not like they had the plan going in of what they wanted to do. So, like, I don't think of it as a queer bait. There's a lot of queer coding, and, like, even in the earliest seasons, there's queer coding with Dean. Like, I will die on that hill that, like, season one, there is queer coding with Dean Winchester. 100%. And, like, obviously there's plenty of it with Cass as well. And, like, you know, Cass has this whole thing where he says he's indifferent to sexual orientation thing. Go off my pan, King.
Love him for that.
Like, and so, like, I do think that when people try to reduce it to queer baiting, they're ignoring so much of the complexities of Destiel and, like, what was allowed and what wasn't allowed and what the network would allow and what the show were in it. Like, it's pretty clear to me that there were people like Robert Singer who were like, no, absolutely not. This is a show about brothers. And also, women can't be in this show. We have to murder them all in extremely heinous and hate crimey kind of ways.
Don't even get me started.
Then you had writers like Bobo Behrens and
Robbie Thompson, Steve Yockey,
who were, I think, more willing to sort of play in that sandbox a little at first, and then some of them later became very strongly attached to the concept of, like, this is the thing that's going to happen. But one of the things that, of course, the show in general, I think, suffered from was that it had such a revolving door of writers in the writer's room. And so, like, the main writers for each episode could sort of do what they want. And there's, like, some who are, you know, again, well-known, like Bobo and Robbie Thompson and Steve Yockey, but also, like, Buck Lemming, who are noted for making every single episode just an absolute travesty. And, like, you know, if it's a Buck Lemming episode because something, like, extremely racist happens or misogynistic, or, like, there's something that you just cringe at. And so, like, because of that, it was really hard to get any consistent character or narrative structure with that kind of relationship, because different writers wanted different things and would write characters in different ways. So you get episodes where you're like, oh, they're really, like, not leaning into this at all. And then episodes where it's like, oh, they're really leaning into this.
Right.
And then there's what the actors are doing and how they're interpreting the lines and stuff like that. And, like, we all obviously know about, like, Jensen's jacting choices, which, sir, please, please.
My God.
And whatever Misha was doing and, like, the sort of long-term thing that people talk about where they're like, is Destiel... because of Jensen and Misha? Like, is it, which came first?
Right.
Kind of deal. Like, Cockles or Destiel, which came first? Kind of deal. But so it's complicated. Like, and I obviously see Destiel, and many, many people see Destiel. And, like, we got in the last season a confirmed love confession, a romantic declaration of love from Castiel to Dean.
Right.
Which felt like a natural buildup of everything that had been happening over these many seasons. Like, Cass, you know, basically fell from heaven for Dean. Like, he fell for Dean. he literally right. fell from heaven for Dean. It's a whole thing, so you could see it. And, like, the people have differing, people have differing interpretations on sort of the Dean of it all, based on sort of screenplay or like the script and all this other stuff. Like, people have different interpretations of that. I mean, my personal interpretation is that the script said Dean can't reciprocate. And what that meant is that in this moment, Dean is not physically or mentally capable of formulating a response to reciprocate. Not that he does not reciprocate. Like, the word can't is doing a lot of work here.
Yeah, I personally, I think that, and I've said this in our previous Destiel episode, but like, I don't think that you can watch the show and look at all the things that Cass does and say like, oh, those are obviously romantic. And then look at all the things that Dean does that are the same or inherently even more unhinged and romantic and be like, but that's not, that's just normal brotherly behavior. Unless you like, one, are a hypocrite, in which case, like, whatever. Or two, you just think that, like, Dean has some sort of, like, very serious mental health beyond just trauma that, like, make him act really oddly and, like, unexplainable. Well, like, I don't know. There's something, like, that's unexplainable. Really, and, like, he definitely has mental health issues, but not in that way. Not that he's like, aha, yeah, like, I'm going to look at you like I want to make out with your face and, like, be really weird about the fact that you don't call me back and, like, rub my hands across your, like, cheeks and whatever and, like...
Come and no, try to wake you up no, while my, like, brother's literally dying in the background.
Right, like, it just... anyway, it just doesn't... it doesn't make sense, but, like... yeah, again, we talked a little bit about, like, the idea of queerbaiting of it all. And again, I think what you said about it being a misunderstanding of that word and maybe a misapplication of that is pretty accurate. Personally, the way that I understand kind of what happened on the show is by viewing it as censorship. Mm-hmm. Both in some ways explicitly and also a lot of implicit censorship. And again, I think a lot of that was just rooted in the legacy that the show created for itself and that the network created around the show. And then also the fact of, like, who was running the network, who was running the mm-hmm. show, like the relationships that people had.
Yeah.
I guess for people who would like a definition, censorship is the suppression or removal of writing or artistic work or speech that are considered unacceptable for some reason. So maybe it's because they're politically unacceptable or socially unacceptable. Maybe it's because it's considered like a threat to either private or public security. It could be considered obscene or immoral, but there's a lot of reasons why things may be censored. And when I say mm-hmm. explicit censorship, I mean where there's like a spoken rule that says these things are not allowed, or physical actions taken to stop or remove like messaging. So for example, like book burning is an explicit form of censorship. We are actually destroying those materials. Implicit censorship is a lot more common, and it's sometimes harder to spot or like harder to identify because, one, it can exist a lot in like social spaces, and honestly, we do it a lot to ourselves and to each other in ways that we often realize. Because there are social rules and norms where we're like, we just don't talk about that. Or those things mm-hmm. just aren't said or discussed. Or, you know, people receive ideas and messaging that says, like, these things are not allowed. Right. And so they're not discussed or they're not brought up or they're avoided. And I think a lot of that occurred within Supernatural, where
mm-hmm.
there were just expectations for what the show was going to be.
Yeah.
Set by the network, set by yeah. whoever. And so the writers wanted to do certain things and also like could only do it to a point because otherwise it was outside of what the show was expected to be.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, Supernatural is known specifically because the creators took such offense to the fans they got. Like, they didn't like the fact that they had expected that, for some reason, these people had expected that they were going to get a fandom of, like, you know, redneck men. And instead they got a bunch of she's, they's, and gays, and they were not thrilled about it. And so, like, did a lot to sort of try to shut that group of people down. They were, like, not excited by it. And, like, there are literally episodes of the show about it where they make fun of their fandom. And they created a character who represents, like, the female fan base. And, like, you know, we've talked about that, and lots of places have talked about that. But, like, this is a show that was not afraid of censorship and of trying to, like, shut down voices that it didn't want to hear from. And so, like, it's not surprising to me that that happened with Destiel. They were like, we don't want to do that. Perhaps they knew it would make the she's, they's, and gays even more feral than usual, which, like, haha, I can't shut us down.
We are feral, it just is.
We are everywhere. It just made us more feral.
Right. You know what's funny to me is, part, this is actually, what you're saying is so representative of why this conversation is so, because we say they when we're referring to the production team of Supernatural or the network, you know, of the CW. But even then, like, that implies that they're all, like, on the same page and are, like, a singular group making these decisions kind of in unity. And they weren't. The people that were involved were not doing that. So, like, there definitely were those people. And, like, you mentioned Robert Singer, and I think he was definitely one of those, like, who led a lot of that. But there were also, as we mentioned, other writers and different people involved that, like, clearly did love and embrace their fans, and who were like that, who were fans. There were women and gay men, and, you know, writing for the show and, like, pushing the narrative of Destiel and of the found family and of the queer characters, you know, who created these nerdy characters modeled after themselves, you know, Charlie, and really embraced a lot of that. And I think that's part of why it's so frustrating and complicated, is because it was both things. Like,
mm-hmm.
And I can understand then why that would create such a complicated writer's room, because if you're someone like Robbie Thompson, who literally created the character of Charlie, basically modeled after himself as a person, and then was like, but a woman, like, I'm a man, I'm writing myself, but, like, as a woman, as a show, and who clearly, like, loved her very much, who was essentially the only person who wrote her until her death, and no one else even bothers to pitch stories for her other than to kill her off, like, I would have complicated feelings about that. Like, it would be really difficult to be like, yes, I am a fan. I want to write things into this show that are representative of people, mm-hmm. like me, and have people like, yeah, and we should kill those characters. Like,
right.
Ow, that has to create tension.
Right, which was, like, you know, especially in the case of Charlie, a notoriously unpopular decision. Like, Jensen and Jared were not happy about it. There's videos of people, like, asking at cons. There's one where they're, like, at a con with, like, Robert Singer or whatever. It's, like, Comic-Con or something. And they're just like, we're not touching that one. Because that was, sorry, not my thing that I did.
Well, and, like, he created Eileen, too. And look at what happened with her. Murdered aggressively and for no reason, and by the same writers. Like,
And then brought
terrible,
back.
terrible choices.
Then maybe she's Blurzla. We don't know.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. I think the like having this sort of revolving door of showrunners post Kripke and then all these different writers and different power dynamics too with them, because you had like Buck Lemming, but like Eugenie Ross Lemming was married to Robert Singer. So like there's a level of power there that means that like these other writers just can't are gonna get shut down. Like it this show was so complicated and like it could have just been gay. It had the opportunity. But also like I think it kind of almost works because then it makes you feel like, oh, like God is trying to shut down this thing. Like Destiny it almost it's so funny the way it almost parallels the way the show goes in that like God was like Castiel in every other universe you did what you were supposed to do but not in this one, and it's like Destiel in every other universe you weren't a thing but in this one you just won't stop, like no matter what we do you keep existing.
Right. Absolutely. It just, yeah, I love it. I love that it just persevered and was like, no, we're here. And you know what? As much as this story is one of hope and perseverance and the idea that like these two human beings that are actually like quite fallible and quite fragile still have the drive and the passion and the desire to save the world and be these amazing men, like in spite of everything that they've experienced. That's an incredible, uplifting story. Part of the draw of Supernatural is that it's inherently like the highest rated episode on IMDb is Swan Song, which is an amazing episode. It's beautiful. Like, I understand why people love it. It's a tragedy. It's terrible how it, like, if that was how it ends, because it's so sad. And, like, I understand that that works for people. And I'm here for it. But the show is inherently tragic. It literally starts off with their mother dying and, like, ends with them dying over and over again until Dean finally dies and like, oh good for them, they're in heaven. But like it's built on tragedy. And so part of the reason that everything with Destiel works so well for me, even despite the way that it ends, is because it fits the inherent theme and like genre of the show, which is that it's tragic. And the tragedy of Destiel in season 15 is that Cass confesses and then is taken to the empty, and Dean cannot respond. And that's tragic. Like, the show could have definitely changed and like chosen to go in a different direction over the course of the seasons, but like, it stuck with tragedy, and I'm like, well, you delivered for sure.
Yeah, I mean, did it deliver satisfyingly? I mean, there are ways to do tragedy that is really satisfying. I don't think Supernatural did that, but that's
No, and we'll have to talk about
maybe a
that one day.
conversation for a different day. For now, is there anything else about Destiel you feel totally normal about that we should talk about?
I just want to take a minute and go over a couple like statistics and everything. As I said, I have these and I'm kind of just holding them until the end, I guess. So let me just pull this up here. Okay. So just some, first of all, some key numbers just from the show. As we know, it was 15 seasons. It had 327 episodes. Obviously, it ran first on the WB that first year and then the CW the rest of the years. It's notable that if you look at the difference in the episode count of Supernatural and then the next longest running scripted show to ever air on the CW, which was Seventh Heaven, it's an 84 episode difference, which is about 4 seasons worth of the show. Over the course of 15 years, it ran over 6 different time periods. So they moved it quite a bit. There were 5.69 million same day viewers for the series pilot. And then there were only 4 times that the number of initial audience viewers fell below 1 million viewers. And those were all in the final season, which I think is incredibly notable. Additionally, there's a site here, and I'll try to link it, like with a graph that shows all of the ratings on IMDb of the different episodes by episode and by season. And it's color coordinated, which I really love, to kind of give you like a visual idea. All but 3 of the episodes are rated at a 7.0 or higher. The 3 lowest rated episodes are the finale, which is rated at a 6.9. Bugs, which is rated at a 6.8. And Bloodlines, which is rated at a 5.8. So apparently people really hate that.
They do. I have some thoughts about Bloodlines, but I won't say them now.
I think it's better than people give it credit for. Like,
I think that if it was not a Supernatural episode, people would love it.
Yeah, I also think a lot of the, you know, the heavy Dusty L paralleling like really did a lot for it, but both good and bad. Notably, anything that's like, so because this is color coded, like anything that's between like 7.0 to like 7.9 or whatever kind of falls in this yellow range, and then anything 8.0 or higher is green, with anything 9.0 dark green. And again, I'll post a link to the graph so like other people can look at it. It's interactive. But one thing that's notable and that I just wanted to point out is essentially every episode that is like a Dusty L-centric episode, that's a meaningful episode, is either green or dark green. Like, it's incredibly highly rated. And this is by viewers and by fans who are obviously like rating these episodes. So they're incredibly well loved. I also just think it's notable, like, if you go and look at the viewership numbers for the different seasons, we know that, obviously, Castiel dies in season 7. And there wasn't an intention to bring him back. And then, basically, the network reached out to Sarah Gamble and Robert, hey, he's not like really dead, right? Like, and we, you know, people have connected that to the ship. But just to like give people numbers here, so you have like an idea. So season 6 kicked off with 2.9 million live, like, or same day viewers. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it stayed either above or like fairly close to 2 million over the course of that entire season. The final episode ended with 2.11 million viewers, again, live or, you know, same day viewers. Season 7 kicked off with 2.01 million viewers. So again, like, still kind of in that range. And season 7 is like deeply into the show.
Mm-hmm.
But viewership, like, pretty quickly declined over that season. And in fact, that is the only episode of that entire season that was over 2 million viewers. And actually, as you get more towards the middle, really, really declines there.
People did not like the Leviathans.
People did not like the Leviathans. I think they also really had a problem with the death of Castiel and the death of Bobby.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think,
very
you know, the Castiel thing
was not great.
They were trying to get rid of him forever, and then they had to really backtrack that because viewership plummeted so much.
Absolutely. And it's fairly notable that when season 8 kicked off, they finally started passing 2 million viewers again, and fairly consistently stayed over 2 million viewers. The only episodes of that season that really dropped below that, notably, were episodes that didn't really center Cass, or, also, followed episodes that didn't really center Cass. And then they stayed pretty high pretty consistently for the next, several seasons. Obviously, there's, you know, over the course of the show, there's a drop-off in viewership from one to season the normal progression of the show anyway. But the other number that really stands out to me is the number for the final few episodes of season 15. So from episode 1518 to episode 1519, there was a fairly significant drop in viewership. It was over 13% drop in viewership. And for an episode that's right before the finale, that's really striking to me. That
people
so
did
many
not
people,
want
like,
Castiel gone.
Right, they really didn't. And, you know, I think there were a lot of people who honestly came for episode 19 and 20 just to see if they brought Cass back. So the fact that there's still such a drop in viewership says a lot to me. Because, again, we're talking about the end of the show. This is, and yet there were still, a number of people who chose not to tune in for episode 19. All that to say, I think those numbers are really interesting, and I think they speak a lot to the impact of Castiel on the show and the significance that he had, not just on the story, but, specifically on viewership, that overall fans rate his episodes more highly, and, character, the fact that, viewership obviously was impacted when in episodes where he was not present. And even at the end there with, you know, his final episode.
Yeah, I think we can't, you know, overstate how important he was to the show as a whole and how important his role was in keeping the show going through those last several seasons. He's a great character, and we love him, and we love Destiel very much.
This is essentially how we're celebrating these anniversaries, is just to think about his impact on the show and its legacy, and we love this show. We love these characters. We're so grateful that Castiel existed, because it obviously really impacted our lives, and we're friends and we're doing this because of this show. So
it's true.
If you guys have strong feelings about Castiel or the show, come talk to us about it, because that's what we live for.
And we'll talk more about Supernatural, of course, in the not-so-far-off future. But we're going to do something a little different and kick off a little bit of a vampire fall next week with Twilight. So we are pretty stoked to talk about that, which is very different from Supernatural.
apparently they're doing some kind of re-release of the movie, which I am very excited about. So we figured that's what we're going to talk about, is the Twilight movie. So stay tuned for that.
We'll see you all then.
Bye.
Totally Normal About That is a podcast hosted and produced by Lucia and Mel. Are you feeling totally normal about something we talked about today? Is there a piece of media you feel totally normal about? We want to hear about it. You can find us on Twitter at @totallynormalat, or you can email us at totallynormalaboutthat@gmail.com. And if you are enjoying these episodes, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast app of choice. Thanks!